We've just changed the effective date, of course, for the comprehensive plan. As you'll recall, we held several public hearings and took testimony on the Central City 2035 plan on September 7th, 14th, and 20th. And then on October 18th, we began our deliberations in earnest. All of the items that we moved and seconded that day are going to be in the amendments reports that's going to be the subject of the public hearings on January 18th. Today, we're going to continue to discuss the items of interest to council members and decide if we want to move and second additional amendments to include in the amendments report. There will not be any public testimony today on these items. And just as a reminder for those of you who are following the process, the public record is closed, which means we are also not accepting written testimony at this point. However, for those of you keeping score, the record will open up again on January 5th in the preparation for the January 18th public hearings on the Central 2035 amendments report. So, Sally, you're going to walk us through today's agenda. Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you very much.
I haven't read the items.
I'm sorry, yeah. And could you please read, we're going to read them all in bulk, if you wouldn't mind, if you could please read items 12, 71, 72, 73, 74, and 75 as a group. Thank you.
1272. Yeah. Adopt the Central City 2035 Plan, Volume 2A, Part 3, Environmental and Scenic, amend the Portland Zoning Map and Portland Zoning Codes for Environmental Overlay Zones and Scenic Resource Zones. 1273, adopt the Central City 2035 Plan, amend the Comprehensive Plan Map, Transportation System Plan, Willamette Greenway Plan, Willamette River Greenway Inventory, Scenic Resources Protection Plan, Zoning Map, and Title 33, repeal and replace prior Central City plans and documents. 1274, adopt the Central City 2035 Plan action charts, performance targets, and urban design diagrams. 1275, adopt the Central City 2035 Plan Green Loops Concept Report.
Very good.
Okay, thank you very much. So we've organized the agenda for today into two parts. The first part includes items that staff believes that council will want to discuss. And the second part of the agenda is a package of amendments that we believe are minor or technical amendments that we believe that council could move and second as a package. As you can see, the first group includes a short report on the West Quadrant Plan map, the scenic views, green buildings, river environmental, and bonuses and transfers. And then we also have this set of minor and technical amendments. So, Mayor, I was thinking that before we go further, I was wondering if you could ask Council if they are interested in pulling any of the minor and technical amendments forward for discussion.
So, colleagues, you have the list before you of the minor and technical amendments. Are there any you'd like to pull out for discussion, or are we prepared to move those as a group? I'll accept a motion if there are none that people would like to discuss.
So moved. Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fritz, a second from Commissioner Udaly.
Terrific. Okay, so those items will now be part of the amendments report that we will have a hearing on January 18th. So today we plan to follow the same process we did on October 18th, and so for each of the proposed amendments we'll have a staff presentation with some background, and then whichever commissioner was most interested in that item, they would begin the discussion. Most of the items on the agenda today are amendments. There's just a couple that are discussion-only items, at least at this time.
Sally, can I just ask a question,
yes.
Just procedural? It is our intent today to go until when?
5:30.
Okay. That's ambitious. Can we get all this in between now and 5:30?
We hope so.
Well, as long as you don't get more interruptions from people like me, we'll have a fighting chance.
That's how much we talk.
I'll say it for you.
Okay. So sure. Shall we get started? Uh-huh. So the first item is the West Quadrant Plan SAC ownership map. So on October 18th, we presented a map showing West Quadrant Plan member ownership. And at that meeting, Commissioner Friss asked if we could provide more explanation regarding how the view corridors go across the central city and why the heights are so different in different places. So just as a reminder, this map, the orange places are those where height is increasing, and the blue are where the height is decreasing, and gray is no change.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. Mindy Brooks, Planning and Sustainability.
Afternoon.
So this, we're going to attempt to explain how the view corridors work here. So in the downtown area, we have no less than 12 views that cross this area, and they're all from different elevations up in the hills. And so using GIS, we really modeled on a block-by-block basis how tall buildings could get before intruding into any of those view corridors. And this is just one piece of information that goes into building heights. We also consider other policies like historic districts and adjacent neighborhoods, adjacent parks. And, for example, much of the area around the transit mall is to increase in height, except where there are view corridors that limit that. And so just to take it down to the street level and show you how complex this is a 5-block area along Southwest Taylor between 3rd and Park. The map on the left shows the increases and decreases in orange and blue. The top map on the right is the existing height limits, which divide all those blocks in half. The map on the bottom right shows the recommended heights, which are based on the view corridor. And because the heights were split now, and they won't be split in the future, half the block is increasing a little bit, and half the block is decreasing a little bit. And it is small increases and decreases. So anyway, this is just an example of how complicated it is to address views in the downtown area. And I will turn it over to Commissioner Friss to...
I think that was a very succinct and eloquent explanation, Mindy. Thank you. So, and this is a summary of literally hours, I know, in preparing this map, and then several hours in explaining to me, to my satisfaction, why each of the lots in this area were up or down. So I asked to have this map made and then the scenic overlays placed over it. I wasn't at all interested in who particularly owned any of the blocks. I just wanted to be able to understand without any kind of bias why are things going up and why are things going down. And I am absolutely satisfied that they there wasn't an influence of the committee members on the outcomes, because there's no place in that area where it shows something that's incongruent. The only one that I'm still concerned about already has an amendment on it, which is the Morrison Bridgehead, and that was not related to the views there, and it's increased. So that's already got an amendment. We'll be discussing it.
Great. Colleagues, any further questions on this item? If not, let's move on to item C3. That's the views of the Vista Bridge. And Commissioner Friss, I understand you have an amendment. Mindy, could you give us some background on that?
Absolutely. So this is the view from Jefferson and 14th, view of Vista Bridge. And last time there were some requests for some additional information, so I'm going to just kind of re-explain what's going on here. The top two images that you're looking at are the existing heights in the view, and the bottom are the recommended heights for the view corridor. The top left shows existing heights of 30 to 45 feet, and the top right shows how that view would change with full build-out. The bottom left shows the recommended heights of 75 feet along the north side of Jefferson Street, and then the bottom right shows how that view would change with full build-out at 75 feet. The reason why staff recommended 75 feet is because Jefferson Street is a commercial corridor along a light rail stop, and 75 feet is more flexible and supports the redevelopment of sites such as the surface parking lot, but 75 feet would cause intrusion into the view corridor. Because the view of Vista Bridge can only be seen from 14th from the street, and then the view disappears until 18th Street, part of the recommendation is to add a new viewpoint at 18th and improve Collins Circle to celebrate the Vista Bridge. At the last session, Commissioner Fritz, you asked that we look into retaining the existing heights to maintain the existing view of Vista Bridge. So the map on the right puts the existing heights back in place, and the map on the left is the recommended heights of 75 feet. And I will turn it over to you, Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you. So I am moving to return the height limits to the existing heights. I'm still keeping that second piece of the amendment of the proposal with the circle, but to return the heights so that that iconic view remains.
Is there a second?
A second.
Commissioner Fritz moves. This is an amendment. Commissioner Udaly seconds. Any further discussion on this item? Next up is green buildings. There's a number of proposed amendments here. Mindy, why don't you walk us through the amendments, please?
Okay. So we will start with eco roofs. So a group of staff from BPS, BDS, BES, as well as staff from Commissioner Udaly and Commissioner Fish's office have been working on this amendment for eco roofs. And the goal has been to really encourage as much eco roof as we can while still providing space for things that have to go on the roof, like HVAC systems and elevator enclosures, and also to allow space for amenity uses up there, like outdoor seating. We have kind of run into three issues that we've been trying to address. One of them is a new fire code that was adopted in 2016 that limits the size of vegetated areas on a rooftop, so some of the amendments are related to that. We need the standard to support architecturally diverse skyline. We don't want a skyline of just flat roofs, so we've been addressing that. And also, we need to make sure that there is adequate space for the things that kind of have to be up there. You need the penthouse for the stairwell enclosure and the elevators and so forth. So we've been working through that. And I want to give an example of how we've been working through it so you can see kind of how this works. But first, I wanted to say that the code that you saw before basically said, first on a roof, you take out items like HVAC and elevator enclosures and all those spaces, and then on the remaining roof, 60% needs to be eco-roof. The way it's structured now is everything needs to be eco-roof, but you're allowed that 40% of the roof can be used for a mix of things that need to be up there. So that's how this has been restructured. This is just an example. It's a generic full block. Could be anywhere in the city. With the new code, as we're proposing it, these are the two ways that we see it could kind of play out. The top scenario is you have the mechanical and all that stuff in the middle, and then everything else goes to eco-roof. And you can see how we've put fire breaks in there to address the fire code and so forth. And you end up with a lot of eco-roof, right? So it really is maximizing. The bottom scenario shows that the code actually allows for that flexibility in that tan space. So that space could be used for mechanical and other things. It could also be used for amenity space. It is a flexible area. But at no point can you go below 60% eco-roof coverage total. So, and then I just have one other example of this on a half block, how it looks on a half block. Similar examples here on trying to maximize that eco-roof area.
So, Mindy, we had a lot of testimony on this particular item, and we had some people advocating for even more stringent standards with regard to eco-roofs. But it's my understanding that this, I don't want to call it a compromise because I think it's still pretty substantial. Would this not be the most progressive eco-roof policy in the United States?
Yeah, it would. Other cities have eco-roof requirements or incentives, but this is definitely a very progressive approach, for sure. Carla handed out to you, I think, or she's handing out now to you, another version of the code. So we put in your packet code, but we've continued to work on it. And so Carla's going to give you a version that has yellow highlighted text, which is also on the screen, that is new.
Thank you.
And I'll just quickly walk through what that is since you haven't had a chance to look at it yet. We added to the purpose statement the three bullets, and these are to make it easier when an adjustment comes in through design review for there to be something to judge it against. So it's helping clarify how an adjustment should be considered underneath of this. We also added an exemption for slopes with a pitch that's greater than 25%. You would not have to put an eco roof on something greater than 25%, although you could if you wanted to, but you're not required to. So those are the two new amendments that we're putting in at
Very
this time.
Good. Commissioner Udaly, would you like to move these as amendments?
Yes, I would like to move them. And
I'll second.
Thank you. I'd just like to say thank you to everyone that helped us fine-tune this amendment. I definitely don't see it as a compromise. We just made it make more sense. I think really balanced our two goals of maximizing the eco-roof space while allowing builder owners and occupants and visitors to enjoy that outdoor area. And I'm just going to quickly list off some of the benefits of eco-roofs for anyone who's listening or remains unconvinced. They significantly decrease stormwater runoff. They help preserve fish habitat. They absorb carbon dioxide and other air pollutants. They cool urban heat centers. And they enhance the energy capacity of solar panels. And I think that you've really gone over all the significant changes to this amendment. The only thing that I want to clarify is this only applies to new development that's over 20,000 square feet in net building area. It will result in a less than 1% increase to the overall cost. And if there is an existing list of exemptions, which would include patio equipment, fire aisles, all of that, if we've forgotten anything and that list needs to be expanded, changes can be made through the annual regulatory improvement code amendment project process.
Commissioner Fish.
I just want to thank Commissioner Udaly and her team for sort of convening the various parties to get to this compromise. And let's be clear, we're moving to a mandate. This is a long time coming. This is a requirement. But this seems like a reasonable compromise in balancing other required and competing uses. And I thank everybody that had a hand in working through to get to this point.
Yeah, I want to share that same sentiment. I think the standard is very important to address our sustainability and our climate action goals, and that includes clean water, it includes clean air, it includes heat island effects, it includes protecting habitat, and considering where we started with this conversation, I think it's come a long way. And Commissioner Udaly, I want to thank you, and I want to thank your team. And I definitely want to thank the Bureau staff for working hard to bring a lot of disparate voices to the table on what, as I said, will now be the most progressive green roof policy in the United States. And I think it's a good, smart one. And I also just want to say anecdotally, I've shopped this around to a number of people that I just know personally who are developers and architects. And the feedback was very positive, particularly based on the accommodations that were made for some of these other amenities on the rooftop. And one individual told me that this is where the market is actually going. And I believe you even showed a couple of photos in your presentations of buildings where that is what the client wanted. Mm-hmm. So I think this is great timing, and I'm very appreciative of your work, Commissioner. Yes, please.
I would also just like to acknowledge local advocates' grit for helping bring this to our attention, and to my staff member, Jamie Duhamel, who really led this process for my office.
Absolutely. Very good. So great. Moving
Thank
along,
you.
There, we're covering a lot of interesting areas today. F2, light pollution, Commissioner Fish. Did you want to move a light pollution amendment?
Yes, I think this is one that Commissioner Fritz and I both support. I'm going to be very clear, Mayor. This doesn't go as far as I would like, but what we're doing is going from the discretionary, rather vague, consider the project to actually initiating a project. I do have concern about the five-year timeline. And I wonder if that's a function of resources and prioritization within the Bureau. Is that, I'm seeing a nod?
Yes.
And so Can you give us a sense of what would be required in terms of council action to make to move this up in terms of priority? Are we talking about funding and staff? Give us a sense of if we thought 5 years was a bit, if we wanted to accelerate the process, Susan, what would you need in order to meet that?
Susan Anderson, Director of the Bureau of Planning Sustainability, and all these will be right in the next 5 years. That doesn't mean it couldn't happen, you know, in year two. We wanted to give ourselves a little room so that when we put out our budget annually, you're able to look at all of the things that are on your list and decide which ones you want to put forward. We could put it forward in our next budget trade-off with something else and see if that's something you want to put at the top of the list.
Mayor, you have a big say on this, and without getting into the weeds here, there's a debate about how you create the standard and the requirement. And BPS has said they want to go through a process to get to that. There's some advocates who've said that the council should set a specific requirement. One way we can, I think, bridge that difference is prioritize a process to get to the standard and then have the council determine when we implement it. But that would require a clear direction to BPS, either with resources or prioritization, that this goes to that this does get done sooner rather than later, Mayor.
I agree. You know, it's very important, and there's been a lot of literature on this in recent months in particular. There's a number of new studies that show about the rapid global spread of light pollution and what the consequences are. And often those consequences are couched in terms of impacts to humans and to wildlife. And it discusses things like disruption of sleep patterns and the destruction of habitat and the collapse of nocturnal animal populations. But it's also important for our energy goals. And so I think it does require a thoughtful approach rather than us just picking a number and hoping we got it right. And so I would support that. And I hear what you're saying with regard to both resources and manpower to back that.
And so, Mayor, I would offer this compromise amendment with the understanding that we would, through the budget process, prioritize establishing the standard and then with some sense of urgency, provide the resources to BPS to implement a standard.
Second.
We have a motion from Commissioner Fish and a second from Commissioner Fritz.
Thank you.
Very good. And then we're getting into F3. This is bird safe, like the other two green building items. This one implements our sustainability values, and it is flexible. And I'd like to move this, but Mindy, could you talk a little bit about some of the details here?
Sure. Really what we're doing with this amendment is just moving the details of it into an administrative rule. The standard itself, what is required, the percentages and so forth, would stay in the zoning code. The administrative rule would handle the specifics about materials and glazing and frit spaces and UV materials and so forth. And we think this is important because this is a new field, a new technology, and it's going to change. And an administrative rule is more flexible. It allows for more change. And we can also put more details in the administrative rule to help developers understand it. That's the amendment.
Great. Is there a second, please?
Second.
It sounds like Commissioner Udaly just beat out Commissioner Fritz on that.
We'll deal with that privately.
Yeah, they'll fight it out. They'll fight it out. Then we'll move on then to H2 redevelopment in the floodplain. Commissioner Fish, I understand you would like to speak to this item and potentially offer up an amendment.
Yeah, I'll let staff go first.
Okay. So just a little bit of background. I just want to remind everybody that the Willamette River hasn't flooded in a while, but it actually does flood every 30 years, about. It flooded in 48, 64, and 96, and this is a lovely picture of the Pearl in 96. And we do expect that flooding will intensify. The frequency will change with climate change. The plan already has an increase in the width of the setback. It applies a new river environmental overlay zone to the river and the riverbanks, and it puts in place a bonus for property owners to choose to set back even further. But all of these requirements and bonus, they come into play at the time of redevelopment. right? And so when somebody redevelops their site, that's when they set back. That's when they can get a hold of this bonus. So we've proposed with Commissioner Fish a new action that directs Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to partner with BES, OMF, the Bureau of Emergency Management, and BDS to explore options to incent people to voluntarily move out of the floodplain in the setback ahead of full site redevelopment.
And I think the theory here, colleagues, is, and I have a few other comments and questions, but it's one thing to say that we typically these things are linked to development, but given that this is a floodplain and given the consequences, I'm not sure we can afford to wait. And so why not consider an incentive plan to have these buildings removed ahead of any redevelopment? And in fact, in some instances, the removal done ahead of redevelopment may actually enhance the redevelopment and create greater options. So the amendment would be to explore options to around potential incentives to remove these structures in floodplains. So it seems to me that's a common sense approach. The question we've heard from a couple of advocates that want to go further and expand this explicitly to the Willamette River Greenway in the Central Reach. There's been some concern from BPS about this. Can you address that for me?
Expand the setback to a wider setback?
Yes.
Okay. We can talk about that too. So the setback right now in the Willamette River is 25 feet from top of bank. It's been that way since 1988. And we all know 25 feet is not enough to protect natural resources. It needs to be wider. Best available science says that, especially when
I'm sorry. I may have misspoken.
Okay.
The amendment says the amendment talks about existing structures in the Willamette River floodplain, or essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And some have suggested we expand that to include the Willamette River Greenway in the Central Reach.
Yes.
Okay.
And that is included in here. So it would be the floodplain or the setback. Is where we would consider these new incentives.
And that's in my amendment?
Yes.
It's late in the day, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I have to be clear about what's in my amendment before I offer it. Thank you.
Yeah. So it's exploring the options to incent property owners to voluntarily move structures or parts of structures out of the floodplain or the river setback prior to any full site redevelopment.
Colleagues, I offer this as an amendment.
Second.
Commissioner Fish moves. Commissioner Fritz, second.
So, as you were saying, Commissioner Fish, there was some requests regarding the width of the setback itself, and so you asked that we have just another discussion about the setback. And as I was saying, it was 25 feet, and we've proposed to expand it to 50 feet, which really is an absolute minimum for setback of development from the river. For the central city, this is really about as wide as you can go because there's a lot of development that already has happened. We've got most of the Greenway Trail there, so going wider just isn't reasonable in the central city. So the 50 feet is where we have stuck with the recommendation.
Okay.
Very good. And I understand this was just flagged as a discussion item. There's not necessarily an amendment.
There's no amendment associated with it.
Is there any further questions on this one, colleagues? Very good. Moving on to bonuses and transfers. Rachel and Joe, you're going to walk us through the proposed amendments.
Good afternoon, Commissioners.
Good afternoon.
Rachel Hoy with BPS. And I'm going to be working from Table G in your packet. The G is the bonus and transfer table. So the first item, G1, we received a testimony that indicated that the transfer areas that are in the recommended draft, which is we call it a transfer within subdistricts, that those transfer areas were not large enough and that we should consider making those transfer areas larger to increase the pool of available FAR and to simplify the system. So staff is proposing to, as you see on the slide here, staff's proposing to combine several of the subdistricts in the downtown area into a single larger, what we're calling a floor area transfer sector. So this area would include the Pearl, downtown, Old Town Chinatown, West End, and South Downtown. we would keep Goose Hollow, South Waterfront, Central East Side, and Lloyd would be combined with Lower Albina, but keep those areas separate. But we do feel that this new sector does increase the pool substantially in the downtown area, and would certainly be responsive to some of the testimony that we've received. This simplifies the system, and we also feel that it keeps the areas corresponding to some of the areas that we modeled for the transportation system, and especially pays attention to the regional transportation system. So just to recap, in your table, Table G, number one, you'll see that this would require zoning code updates that are in your table, and then the map that's shown on your screen here shows the creation of this larger sector. So, Mayor, I'm going to turn it over to you if there's any discussion on this particular amendment.
Is there any further discussion? I'd like to move this as an amendment. I don't know if people have any further discussions before we get a second.
Second.
Commissioner Udaly seconds.
So it's
any further discussion?
I have a question.
Please.
About, it's not the amended part, it's 2A. It says the sending site must not be a historic or conservation landmark. What's the reason for that?
Because we do have a historic resource transfer. So in the new system of transfers, we've got the historic resource transfer. So if you're a historic resource, we want you to use that transfer.
Okay, and you can't get both.
Right.
Thank you. That's helpful.
All right, G2A, increased bonus FAR for a fee in lieu.
And I'm going to turn this
to you. Great. Yeah. G2 has two components. The first is a request to increase the amount of floor area that a project earning a Central City and Inclusionary Housing Bonus, a commercial project, an office building, can earn in response to concerns that the cost per square foot in our current inclusionary housing program is too high enough that it's going to discourage use of the bonus. And the result of that would be that whereas we would just get less resources in for affordable housing through the bonus if the bonus isn't used, and secondly, we run the risk of having Central City buildings underbuilt. The inclusionary housing program put a fee of $24 a square foot on it. It was determined for that fee was determined as part of the study we did to create inclusionary housing, which was an economic study looking at pro formas and the cost of development. When we did that study, we looked very closely at the cost of residential development, since that's really the focus of the inclusionary housing program. Our look at commercial development was present, but wasn't as in-depth, and we've had nagging concerns that that cost may be too high. And since we did the study in 2016 to today, the cost of construction in general in Portland have gone up 5% a year. So we think that this proposal that we are, I'll explain next, is sort of a good conservative hedge against this concern about the cost of that per square foot. The proposal would be this. Currently, for $24, you get 1 square foot of additional floor area you can build on a commercial building through the bonus system, up to a 3-to-1 bonus for the whole site. So you can earn it, you pay for it per square foot, you're capped at 3-to-1. The money that's raised by this goes into the Affordable Housing Fund. We're proposing, instead of 1 square foot for $24, we amend the zoning code in this case for an interim period, 18 months is what we're proposing, and make it 1.5 square feet for $24. The impact of that is right to reduce the effective cost per square foot for a commercial building. We're limiting the amount of time that we would do this provision so that we can sync it up with the the ordinance that requires the inclusionary housing program to be reexamined and recalibrated in 3 years since its adoption. So we can double check as part of that analysis that this move that we've made here is still calibrated correctly.
This is good work, and it addresses a problem that's been identified by commercial developers. And I want to stress it's an interim strategy. This is not a permanent fix. This is an interim solution, and I will therefore move this.
Before we move it, can we have a conversation?
Please.
So, Joe, one of the things that we were clear about when we adopted inclusionary zoning is that we wanted a fee-in-lieu process, but we wanted to structure the overall system to encourage units on-site. And that's because for twofold. One is we wanted to capture the bird in the hand. We wanted, as development was progressing, get the units while they were, you know, while the market was hot. And we also thought that we were likely to get more units in high opportunity areas. And so creating a fund for some later time, you know, was less certain. Less certain, less likely to be in a high opportunity area. And so my recollection and my recollection on many things these days has been compromised, so you'll correct me. My recollection is that we wanted to create a slight disincentive from people using fee in lieu because we thought that the actual on-site affordable housing component, particularly in the central city, was preferable. Could you respond?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. And so that's why this particular proposal only applies to commercial buildings. So because to make the system that you just described, Commissioner, work for residential or mixed-use buildings that include a residential unit, we did a very close economic analysis to create that disincentive, to create really the incentive to build the units on site. A commercial building's not going to include units, so we always just had a straight-up fee in lieu for that additional space.
That's very compelling.
Yeah, so that's the whole reason
That's number one. Here's my second question. In a commercial building like this, to what extent can we attach other requirements or that are sort of in keeping with Portland values, like around how the building treats workers or any other thing that the council considers? To what extent can we add that as a rider to this program?
It would be a major change in the inclusionary housing program.
I'm just talking about on the commercial side.
Yeah, and even on the commercial side, because the premise that's at the heart of this whole discussion is that we think there's value in the additional floor area, and that we're trying to capture some of that value that we're allowing as a bonus and use that for a public benefit. So anything else we add as a rider has the same problem of it will have an additional cost.
So we're actually, in essence, in that case, opening up the old discussion and creating another cost, so we have to treat it that way.
Yeah. There's issues with the SEIU proposal that we'll talk about. I think it's next time. But anything we want to add to this list of public benefits that we ask in return for a bonus, we should calibrate when we set the price, because it's all really a game of setting how much value we can capture, what's the cost of that to deliver, the price of the additional FAR.
So when we later come back and talk about the SEIU proposal, what I'm interested in better understanding from you is where's the strongest nexus between us weighing in on this subject of responsible contractors and some discretionary action that someone would otherwise not have a right to.
Great, that'll be
and
great.
And it is somewhat anomalous to me that in most of our policies, we require prevailing wage, area standards, certain kinds of things, but that we've on this sort of backdoor stuff, we don't have a standard. Now there'll be some who say it's none of our business, and others who say it's precisely our business. But what I'm interested in knowing from your point of view is where's the clearest nexus?
Right. I'm glad to talk about that.
Thank you.
Commissioner Fritz, seconds. Any further discussion on this item?
Great. Thank you. So the second part of G2 is a request to increase the amount of bonus floor area you can earn in the central city above a 3-to-1 cap. The 3-to-1 cap has been established since the original central city plan, and we did not propose changing it in the development of the Central City 2035 plan, but in examining, researching this particular question, this issue that was put on the table, we believe that we could, as a city, choose to go above the 3-to-1 cap, and there's just some steps, some analysis we need to do in advance to get it right. Part of the reason we think it's worth exploring now, too, is, you know, more density in the central city is a baseline goal, right? More housing development in the central city supports our goal. We just have to make sure that it aligns with the infrastructure capacity and some other things in the central city. And secondly, remember our principle that we adopted with Central City 2035 is there's value in this additional FAR if we were to create it, and we want to capture that value for a public benefit. And we need to do the economic analysis to see how much we should be charging for whatever additional FAR you want to put on the table that we think we can accommodate. And then there's going to be the question of where should we distribute it in the central city. With that, we're proposing, I'm supposed to turn it over to the mayor now, I think.
And so that, Joe, so summarize the action. We're proposing an action item for a near-term legislative project in 2018, and in your table has a description of the full action and the work that we would do from developing the options to the analysis Joe described.
Yeah, and just to give a little context here, I've had a number of conversations with people who are not comfortable moving this as part of the 2035 plan. They want this to be a data-driven conversation and a thoughtful conversation. So effectively, this amendment pulls it out of that process, creates the legislative process. You know, my view has not wavered. I believe, you know, the comp plan and the central city plan both call for increased density in the central city. That's the appropriate place for increased density. We're in a housing emergency, so we know that we need that density. But I also want us to be thoughtful about how and where that density is located. So we're proposing this amendment to effectively pull it out and have a more thoughtful side conversation.
And I second that.
And Commissioner Fritz seconds it. I don't know if there's further conversation on this particular
I just wanted
item.
To add that the certainty is in the height, and that's why we've had such a lot of discussion on the maximum heights, because the bonuses can't go above the maximum height. Is that correct?
Correct. You are the ultimate cap, and what can be built on a site is the maximum height. Part of the proposal was just to let buildings go up to their maximum height. We just never designed the system to work that way. It's designed for a different purpose, but more floor area in the central city could be accommodated, and we're interested in going and finding it and putting it into the bonus system.
Great.
And we would like the transfer system to be continued to be used as a tool, so between the bonus system and our transfer system.
All right, good. Sally, is there anything else we need to do today?
Mayor, we just wanted
Commissioner Fish first, sorry.
Say that since we have 35 minutes that we've saved, Joe, would you care to give us a longer treatise on 2035?
No.
I don't know.
With all due respect.
My computer died when you said that, so I think Carla's now editorializing.
Excuse me, Mayor. We're just not
something?
Totally positive that you moved this last amendment.
Did, and Commissioner Fritz, a second.
Yeah.
We heard the second, but the move. Okay, great.
Sorry.
Just wanted to be sure we're.
I'm told I'm a very quiet person, so.
Okay. All right. So, so our next meeting is on December 6th, time certain at 2 to 5. The schedule is up on the screen, so we have that. Outlined. There'll be no public testimony there. We have penciled in a date in January just in case we need it. We're hoping we don't, because that's going to be kind of tight with the holidays. We will be publishing this amendments report January 5th, the public hearing on the amendments report January 18th, and then we'll be moving forward, and we will have our final vote on May 24th, right after the comprehensive plan vote that you will have it on May 24th.
Very good. And I've heard from a number of people that through necessity and through law, this process is somewhat complicated. And it's very confusing to people who are trying to figure out when they can chime in. So I just want to reiterate, January 18th
Correct.
Is your next opportunity to chime in person. And I hope we'll do a good job of pushing that information out to the public.
We will, and we will be sending out a public notice about that hearing. The other thing I want to mention is that we've been trying to keep our website up to date with summaries of these meetings so people
see.
Where
is your website?
Yep.
Where?
Bureau of Planning and Sustainability website.
Very good. Commissioner Fritz.
I'm confused. I thought we had some more to do on open space and transportation system plan. When are those amendments going to be on the table?
So on December 6th, we have a number of items. It's going to be a much longer afternoon. We have height and FAR, a couple of items there. Some scenic pieces we're bringing back, zoning code and use allowances, bonuses and transfers, and that includes allowing FAR transfer from open space, Commissioner Fritz. There's some master plan, some parking, and a variety of other things.
And that includes,
and that's all on December 6th.
And that's the D amendments are on the 6th as well.
Table D. Table, let me see here.
So that was
That is just the, that was part of the minor and technical amendment package that you all voted on at the beginning of the meeting.
Because that was
the I-5 Rose Quarter, your addition.
Okay.
Yes, that was part of that package.
Okay. And all the other ones that I have. Okay, yeah. I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. Anything
good.
Else for the good of the order?
That's it.
All right. We're adjourned. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
My stuff overprepared me.
You thought we needed more time.